could only be used for nuclear centrifuges. Now, the federal government, as you might suspect, has many experts when it comes to centrifuge. Most of them work for nuclear labs based at the Department of Energy. They all looked at the same evidence and said, no way, can't fit in these centrifuges, and they came up with a whole different use for them. These are for rocket launchers.
We only have a minute, and some more names. Names of people, every aspect.
One of the figures we interviewed for the book is Admiral Thomas Wilson, who was the former chief of the Defense Intelligence Agency up until May 2002. A couple months earlier, in 2002, he testifies before the Senate. We found this testimony, got no coverage at the time, in which he's asked to identify the five most pressing threats to the United States, security threats to the United States. Iraq isn't even on the list. In his testimony about Iraq, Wilson said that he didn't believe, in fact, in the book, he's quoted for the first time saying, I never believed they had a nuclear program. I never believed they were an immediate WMD threat. What he testified at the time was that Saddam's military was degrading. It was weak. It was morale. It was not a regional threat. And that was the chief intelligence officer of the Department of Defense in the spring of 2002. His testimony got no coverage. He was replaced, and very shortly thereafter, the rhetoric from the Pentagon changed dramatically.
We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you very much for being with us. The book is called Hubris, the inside story of spin scandal and the selling of the Iraq war. The authors, Newsweek investigative reporter Michael Isikoff and The Nation magazine's David Korn. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, today at noon, I'll be speaking at the National Press Club. Tonight at the People's Congregational Church at 4704 13th Street here in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow, Philadelphia and Houston, then Oakland and Los Angeles. That does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shruf Abdokadous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yul Barichin, Aaron Mate, Frank Lopez, Jen Utes, Mike DeFilippo, and Nick Marsilio are our engineers. I also want to thank our team on the road, Dennis Moynihan, Chuck Skurich, and Andres Contreras. Our website is democracynow.org, where you can sign up for our daily digest, our headlines, and our stories that we're working on. I'm Amy Goodman, reporting from Washington, D.C., for another edition of Democracy Now!
And yeah, how can you top that? This is WUSB in Stony Brook, as those people, I think they are, said. It's 6 o'clock, which means, once again, time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. And, of course, we'll be taking phone calls tonight. In fact, I'd like to take a lot of phone calls tonight, only because it's, well, it's the day after September 11th, for one thing. I'm sure there's a lot on people's minds after having gone through what we've been going through the last 5 years and whatever we've gone through over the past 24 hours or so. Because there certainly is a lot of it out there, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, people like to say that September 11th is a very important day in our nation's history. But I like to think that September 12th is actually a lot more important. Why? Well, think of it. We all know what happened on September 11th. We all saw it. But the future is determined by what happens on September the 12th and beyond. So if you're looking for symbolism, it's the day after September 11th that defines the direction that we're heading in. So in a sense, ever since the day after the original September 11th, September 12th, 2001, it's all been one big September 12th. And the day is not over yet, because while we may have steered into a particular direction, it doesn't mean that's a direction we're going to keep going in forever. So I'd like to hear some feedback on that, viewpoints as to just what path we have started to go down, or pretty much are continuing to go down, and if there's any possibility of getting onto a different path, or maybe we're on the right path. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe all my trepidation and concern is for naught. Who knows? Well, our phone number is country code 1, or just dialing 1 for the sake of it, because they make you do that for some reason. Area code 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. And we're taking phone calls in just a little bit, but write down that number and start calling it in about, I don't know, 15 minutes or so. I'm sure it'd be good to hear viewpoints from all over the world. I especially want to hear from new people, people who have never called before. People have never heard their voice on the radio before. And I guess I should remind you, turn your radio down when you call in, because otherwise it gets really confusing for everybody. Since we're on delay, and you'll hear your voice coming out after you say something, and it'll make you stop, and then you'll stop 7 seconds later, or however many seconds later you're listening on the internet. And it just doesn't sound very good. All right, so Did we all see the path to 9/11? I saw this yesterday and the day before, because I felt compelled to know what I was talking about when I discussed it today and whatever other days I wind up discussing it. You know, it was an interesting tale. It really was. In some ways, well done. Other ways, my God, what propaganda. I mean, it's so easy. They say that hindsight is 20/20 for a reason, because it's so easy to go out there and say, oh, look, we could have stopped this. We could have prevented this if only this had been done. And that's all fine and good if the action that you're looking at is the only action taking place. You know, if somebody has a lead on a particular terrorist attack, and it's the only lead in the entire world at that particular time, and then they ignore it, yeah, that's pretty bad. That's pretty dumb. But when you add in millions and millions of other things going on at the same time, and then focus on the one that turned out to be the real one, and look at people not following up on that, yeah, it looks horrible. It looks horrible, but it's not really true. It's not really the way things happen. Now, a lot of things did sort of happen the way they say it did. Particularly when certain things blew up and some conversations that may have happened. But wow, I could not believe how flagrantly, I guess, pro-Bush, anti-Clinton this thing turned out to be. Now, why do I say that? First of all, I think all the people screaming and crying last week about, oh my God, this thing can't go on the air, I didn't go along with that at all. I wanted to see the thing. I wanted to see the thing in its original form. Because I believe that people should see all sorts of works of art. At the same time, though, if someone is being defamed, you speak up. You make the world know about it. You get them to make whatever changes you feel are justified. And I think that's sort of what we did with the making of Takedown. That's what was documented in Freedom Downtime. We saw a film that was defaming somebody who couldn't protect themselves, and so we protested against that. But I don't think anybody was saying that this production should be shut down and people should not be allowed to tell this story unless it's done exactly the way we say it's done. No, you voice your opposition and you make sure the public knows. And then you make sure the public puts pressure on to either get the story right or to make sure that the thing is a huge failure when it does come out. So yeah, I had a real problem with all the people last week screaming and crying about how this didn't portray Clinton in exactly the right light and how it was unfair to Democrats and overly fair to Republicans. You know, I couldn't care less about that. It turned out to be true. But, you know, let that be said. Let it be shown. And then you have conversations about it afterwards. So watching this thing, the first part of it, my God, it was 3 hours long on Sunday and then 2 more hours last night. Oh, and wasn't that precious how they sandwiched in a George W. Bush speech on 9/11 right in between the two halves of it last night? Oh, they didn't plan this out, did they? I mean, that sort of adds, well, in a sense, it sort of adds legitimacy, doesn't it? It's like, here's the real president. He's speaking to us live in the middle of this film that supposedly documents what happened. The first half, though, the first 3 hours on Sunday was mostly during the Clinton administration, and they just would not stop with, what is this president going to do? When is he going to do something? When is this administration going to act? We seem so weak. We seem like we don't care. Over and over and over and over again. It just got to be a little tired. And then you had this, the leader of the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, who was particularly harsh on the U.S. policy, saying, don't you have any real men left in Washington, D.C.? Do you think he really said that? Do you think he really came out there and disrespected the standing government in Washington, D.C. at that time and said something to the effect of, do we have to wait until next year, meaning the year that Bush comes into power, for something to happen? Now, if you look carefully at the film, you saw that both sides really were shown as being somewhat ineffectual, not knowing what the right hand is doing. But Bush just got away with a lot more because there's so much more you can focus on with Bush. For instance, when the attacks occurred on 9/11, that huge amount of time where he didn't really do anything, where he stayed holed up in an elementary school. That was completely glossed over, whereas the Monica Lewinsky nonsense was focused on for quite some time, a lot more than it really needed to be. And I also remember something. This is how history kind of gets rewritten over time. I remember when Clinton launched the missiles against both Afghanistan and Sudan in a supposed strike against al-Qaeda. And at the time that happened, the Republicans went mad that he was doing this simply to cover up the whole Monica Lewinsky affair. They went crazy, saying, my God, this guy's lost his mind. He's shelling countries to divert attention away from impeachment. And now, when you look back on it through little docu-propaganda dramas like this, he wasn't doing enough. He wasn't shelling enough countries. He wasn't acting. So it's incredible how you can rewrite history to reflect the agenda that you happen to be involved in at the moment. So now that was, I found that to be completely inaccurate, not the way I remembered it at all. A couple other minor things too. They were showing the millennium in Times Square. It's not really the millennium, but everybody, including al-Qaeda, seemed to think it was the millennium. Yes, we will strike on December 31st, 1999, the eve of the millennium. No, the millennium started in 2001. You'd think that people in caves in Afghanistan would have taken the time to study that part, but no, everybody got that wrong. So apparently all these attacks were imminent, so imminent, in fact, that they were considering canceling the Times Square celebrations, which I was in the middle of. In fact, I was in the front of it. And basically, I remember when reports were coming out at the time that, yeah, some guy was found carrying explosives on the West Coast. But it was never really, I guess, multiplied to what it was presented as in this film, that all these attacks were imminent. Didn't seem that way at the time. It seemed like maybe there was going to be something, but nobody was really sure. And the level of paranoia that was reflected in the film just was not present in Times Square. I mean, yeah, there were a lot of cops everywhere, but they were showing people being searched going into Times Square. That did not happen. That happens now. It did not happen back then. That was not the mood. And I think what they're trying to do, whether it's intentionally or simply because they don't know any better, they're trying to basically make it seem as if the way things are now are the way things always were. For instance, you'll see a film about maybe somebody going to high school in the 1970s, and you'll see them going through a metal detector and being frisked for guns and everything like that. And that was not the way it was. But if you're led to believe that things have always been that way, then you'll somehow think that, yeah, this is normal. This is how things are supposed to be. And it's not. It's not how things are supposed to be at all. So basically, this thing follows the life of this guy O'Neill, who worked for the FBI, and eventually wound up being the security guy, main security guy at the World Trade Center. Now, he's having a meeting 2 days before September 11th with his security staff, saying, "We will protect these buildings. We will, you and I will make sure that these buildings remain standing." Who has that kind of speech just out of the blue? It's like, yeah, September 11th is 2 days away, so let's have a unified stand here. It was just bad. You all know something like that could not possibly have happened at just that time with just that flare of drama. Do you think there's a meeting going on at the Health Science Center right now here at Stony Brook, the tallest building on Long Island, where the chief of security, whoever that is over there, is saying, "We will keep this building standing"? Does he do that every day? Or just 2 days before planes crash into it, which he somehow knew was coming? It's silly. I mean, it's great drama, it's great fiction, but it's not the way things happen. Another thing, that leader of the Northern Alliance was assassinated. And this is true. This really happened. He was assassinated by Al-Qaeda operatives. But he, in speaking to his CIA friends, because this is one of the good guys, so he was friends with the CIA, he said, "If I am killed, that is a signal that Al-Qaeda is coming." Does that make any sense at all? Al-Qaeda has to kill him to send a message to the United States that they're coming. And he knows this. Why do they need to? They could just come. They could just arrive. They could say, "Surprise, here we are." They don't have to. Or they could kill him and then not come. At what point did they say to him, or at what point was it revealed to him, that, yeah, if I'm killed, that means that they're going to go to the United States and do something with airplanes? it's absurd. But as it turned out, yes, he was killed on, I believe, September 9th, another, I guess right when that security meeting was going on in the World Trade Center, and it was revealed to one of the characters, "Oh my God, that's the symbol. That means they're coming." And sure enough, 2 days later, they came. Except that's not really the way it happened. His death was not revealed until after September 11th. We didn't even know about it. So yeah, dramatic license, quite a bit of it. It was fun. It was fun to watch. And mercifully, you didn't see too much of the horrible stuff that must have gone on the airplanes. I still can't bring myself to watch those other films that have been coming out. It's a whole plethora of films. But you got to take these things for what they are, fictionalized works. I'm just worried that a lot of people are going to think, yeah, this is exactly the way things happened. And I can understand. I can understand the worry, especially people in political office might feel towards this kind of thing. And you have to ask yourself the timing. Obviously, the anniversary of September 11th, but the timing as far as crucial midterm elections, having the president come on right smack in the middle of the thing, just seems like there should be other sides represented, and you don't see that very often. I'm not talking about the crazy sides out there. Did you see this piece? Let me see if I can find this. This was unbelievable. I'm happy that when intelligent people actually speak out against nuttiness. And that's what I consider most of the 9/11 conspiracies. Now, I don't write off all conspiracies. Never will, never did, and nothing like a good conspiracy. But some of these conspiracies are so way out there that you got to wonder who's really behind them. If you want the ultimate conspiracy theory, who's behind these conspiracy theories? Somebody who does not want us to focus on the real facts, you know, on the complicity and how U.S. foreign policy is leading us down really, really bad paths and things like that, you know? There was a piece in The Nation last week by Alexander Coburn called The 9/11 Conspiracy Nuts. Yeah, he doesn't pull any punches. Listen to this. Of course, he's been widely condemned as everything from a Zionist sympathizer to someone who comes from a different planet. But he spoke his mind, and I think it's important to do that. You trip over one fundamental idiocy of the 9/11 conspiracy nuts in the first paragraph of the book by one of their high priests, David Ray Griffin, the New Pearl Harbor. In many respects, Griffin writes, the strongest evidence provided by critics of the official account involves the events of 9/11 itself. In light of standard procedures for dealing with hijacked airplanes, not one of these planes should have reached its target, let alone all three of them. The operative word here is should. One central characteristic of the nuts is that they, and I don't call them nuts, but I'm going to call them nuts while I'm reading his piece because, yeah, that's how he refers to them. And some of them are nuts. There's no question about that. But not all of them. The operative word here is should. One central characteristic of the nuts is that they have a devout, albeit preposterous, belief in American efficiency. And hence, many of them start with the racist premise that Arabs in caves weren't capable of the mission. They believe that military systems work the way Pentagon press flax and aerospace salesmen say they should work. They believe that at 8:14 a.m., when American Airlines Flight 11 switched off its radio and transponder, an FAA flight controller should have called the National Military Command Center and NORAD. They believe, citing reverently this from High Priest Griffin, the U.S. Air Force's own website, that an F-15 could have intercepted American Airlines Flight 11 by 8:24, and certainly no later than 8:30. They appear to have read no military history, which is too bad, because if they had, they'd know that minutely planned operations, let alone responses to an unprecedented emergency, screw up with monotonous regularity by reason of stupidity, cowardice, venality, and other whims of providence. According to the minutely prepared plans of the Strategic Air Command, an impending Soviet attack would have prompted the missile silos in North Dakota to open and the ICBMs to arc toward Moscow and kindred targets. The tiny number of test launches actually attempted all failed, whereupon Strategic Air Command gave up testing. Was it badly designed equipment, human incompetence, defense contractor venality, or conspiracy? Did the April 24th, 1980 effort to rescue the hostages in the U.S. Embassy in Tehran fail because a sandstorm disabled three of the eight helicopters, or because agents of William Casey poured sugar into their gas tanks in yet another conspiracy? Do the military's varying attempts to explain why F-15s didn't intercept and shoot down the hijacked planes stem from predictable attempts to cover up the usual screw-ups or because of conspiracy? Is Mr. Cohen, in his little store at the end of the block, hiking his prices because he wants to make a buck, or because his rent just went up, or because the Jews want to take over the world? It's been said that anti-Semitism is the socialism of fools. These days, the 9/11 conspiracy fever is fast becoming the socialism of the left. My inbox overflows each day with fresh proofs of how the towers were demolished. I have to say, mine too. Every day I get email from somebody saying, hey, look, it's proof. It's another film that came out. Solid proof. Yeah, okay, fine. Anybody can make a film, you know. Anybody can cite sources that don't really exist. Anybody can theorize. Continuing, I meet people who start quietly asking me what I think about 9/11. What they're actually trying to find out is whether I'm part of the coven. I imagine it's like being a normal Stoic in the 2nd century AD, going for a stroll in the forum and meeting some fellow asking, with seeming casualness, whether it's possible to feed 5,000 people on 5 loaves of bread and a couple of fish. Indeed, at my school, the vicar used to urge on us Frank Morrison's book, Who Moved the Stone. It demonstrated, with exhaustive citation from the Gospels, that since on these accounts, no human had moved the stone from in front of Joseph of Arimathea's tomb, it must have been an angel who rolled it aside so Jesus could exit, astonish the mourners, and then ascend. Of course, Morrison didn't allow the possibility that angels never existed or that the gospel writers were making it up. It's the same pattern with the 9/11 nuts. There are photos of the impact of the quote-unquote object that hit the Pentagon, i.e. the Boeing 757, Flight 77, that seemed to show the sort of hole a missile might make. Ergo, it was a missile, and a 757 didn't hit the Pentagon. As regards the hole, my brother Andrew, writing a book about Rumsfeld, has seen photos taken within 30 minutes of impact, clearly showing the outline of an entire plane, including wings. This was visible as soon as the smoke blew away. And if it was a missile, what happened to the 757? You know, it's funny. I always ask that question. And the answer is always, that's not the point. That's not the point. The 757 disappeared into thin air. Let's not even think about that. That's, no, it's a missile. They fired a missile. They wanted you to think it was a 757, but a missile is what they really used. Yeah, okay, great. Continuing here. Did the conspirators shoot it down somewhere else or force it down and then kill the passengers? Why plan to demolish the towers with pre-placed explosives if your conspiracy includes control of the two planes that hit them? Why bother with the planes at all? Why blame Osama if your fall guy is Saddam Hussein? The demolition scenario is classic. Who moved the stonery? The towers didn't fall because they were badly built as a consequence of corruption, incompetence, regulatory evasions by the Port Authority, and because they were struck by huge planes loaded with jet fuel. No, they collapsed because Dick Cheney's agents methodically planted demolition charges in the preceding days. It was a conspiracy of thousands, all of whom, party to mass murder, have held their tongues ever since. Every single one. You notice how these people in Iraq who are torturing prisoners, they can't shut up. They're bragging about it. They're telling other people. It's filtering out. They're taking pictures. Yeah, they can't keep something like that quiet. How do they keep something like this quiet? Continuing here. Of course, the buildings didn't suddenly pancake. People inside who survived the collapse didn't hear a series of explosions. As discussed in Wayne Barrett and Dan Collins' marvelous Grand Illusion about Rudy Giuliani and 9/11, helicopter pilots radioed warnings 9 minutes before the final collapse of the South Tower that it might well go down, and similar warnings repeatedly as much as 25 minutes before the North Tower's fall. What Barrett and Collins brilliantly show are the actual corrupt conspiracies on Giuliani's watch, the favoritism to Motorola, which saddled the firemen with radios that didn't work, the ability of the Port Authority to scrimp on fire protection, the mayor's catastrophic failure in the years before 9/11 to organize an effective emergency command, meaning that many lives could have been saved, cops and firemen could have communicated, and firemen could have heard the helicopter warnings and the Mayday messages that saved most of the police. That's the real world, in which Giuliani and others have never been held accountable. Instead, the conspiracy nuts have combined to produce a ludicrous distraction. Bravo. And that from Alexander Coburn, entitled The 9/11 Conspiracy Nuts. I believe it's still the current edition of The Nation. And yeah, it says it better than I think I ever could. It's a distraction. We're not focusing on the real issues. Yeah, there's all sorts of stupidity and incompetence and things that need to be investigated and answers that need to be given. But when you come up with something as bizarre as everybody getting together to conspire to fire missiles at the Pentagon and blow up the World Trade Center, for what purpose? I'm not quite sure. Then we don't ask those questions. We don't ask the important ones. Okay, and Al-Qaeda has released a special 9/11 anniversary message. Greetings from Al-Qaeda. Well, they might as well. They might as well just do that. Your leaders are hiding from you the true extent of the disaster, says the fugitive deputy to Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. And this appeared on Islamic websites late Sunday. The days are pregnant and giving birth to new events. My God, what an image. The days are pregnant and giving birth to new events with Allah's permission and guidance. The recording appears to have been made recently with references to Israel's bombardment of Lebanon and the kidnapping of Israeli soldiers by Palestinian militants in Gaza and by Lebanon's Hezbollah guerrillas. It criticizes the West for arming Israel and calls on the Muslim nation to rush with everything at its disposal to the aid of its Muslim brothers in Lebanon and Gaza. Al-Zarqawi says any attack on Westerners and Jews anywhere can be considered fair because, quote, the reality of international politics is the humiliation and repression of the Muslim at the hands of the idol kings who dominate this world, unquote. And it goes on and on and on like that. And we just love it when these things come out because it makes us so angry. It makes us want to go to war even more. It makes us want to keep fighting where we are fighting. Just like Bush's speech last night. What a tremendous waste of time that was. And it sparked all these partisan squabbles now throughout Capitol Hill. 8 weeks before elections that will determine control of the House and Senate, Democrats charged that the president was playing politics with the memory of 9/11. Republicans, and this is Greg, Republicans questioned whether Democrats are more interested in protecting terrorists than the country. Oh, well, they got them, didn't they? That's what the Democrats have long been after, is protecting the terrorists. I mean, it's just incredible to me that people can stand up and say this sort of thing and not be rushed by an angry mob immediately. I'm sure the angry mob is coming. They're just looking for directions, but wow. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, on Tuesday, that's today, accused Bush of trying to tap into the emotions renewed by the 9/11 anniversary to boost flagging support for the war in Iraq. In his speech, Bush portrayed the war in Iraq as part of a struggle for civilization with terrorists, one on par with World War II and their struggle against fascism and the Nazis at the time. Democrats strongly contest that idea, saying that the Iraq war is a distraction from the global drive to stop terrorism. We learn that America must confront threats before they reach our shores, whether those threats come from terrorist networks or terrorist states, Bush said. I'm often asked why we're in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was not responsible for the 9/11 attacks. The answer is that the regime of Saddam Hussein was a clear threat. And he said that without giving any more details. He also said that we're a lot safer now that Saddam Hussein is not in power. I disagree. I'm not a big fan of Saddam Hussein. I'm not a fan at all. But, you know, it's basically like we had a block party and we invited Al-Qaeda to come. And that's what Iraq is now. All the fighters are there. They're learning how to fight us. They're practicing. They're getting inspired. The rest of the world is getting angry. And, yeah, if Saddam Hussein had still been in power, none of that would have been true. So, no, I don't think we're safer because he's not in power. I don't think it would be a picnic if he was in power, but I don't think we're any safer, and I think the Iraqi people are suffering a whole lot more. So I'm sorry, that little argument just does not wash with me. And I think enough people see that these days, I hope. Because if we don't see it at this stage, we may never see it. And I'm talking as a collective, the American public as a group. This is brilliant, too. I don't know if you heard about this story. By the way, our phone number, phone lines open, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I'd like to get a bunch of calls before I start taking calls so I don't just get the same people calling in and then having nothing to go to when I get tired of hearing what the same people are saying. Yes. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. 631-632-9872. And you might have to wait a little while, and it might even disconnect you. If it disconnects you, call right back. You're not being charged anything. But listen to this story. The American military recently released these statistics about how the murder rate in Iraq has gone down. Yeah, the murder rate's going down. Everything is peachy. It's finally happening. But guess what they did not count? They didn't count anybody killed by bombs, mortars, rockets, or other mass attacks, including suicide bombings. I mean, are statistics worth anything anymore? Yeah, under the military definition, murders include civilians killed who are specifically targeted, but do not include executions or those killed in indirect fire, improvised explosive devices, car bombs, suicide attacks. I mean, this propaganda war is really getting pretty silly, don't you think? All right, we have a few calls. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say something about your disbelief that incredible statements happen coincidentally.
Okay.
In November 20th, 1963, page one of the Times shows Nixon in Dallas quoting, "I would do whatever it takes to get them out of office. This country can't afford four more years of that kind of administration."
When did he say this?
2 days before the assassination.
Wow.
To the Teamsters. It's a page one quote from the New York Times.
But has anybody really credibly
not
said that
everything
Nixon...
Everything else that you're saying is just that. I just wanted to put in your ear.
Yeah, but I mean, that's something that's like really bizarre. That, you know, it's just, I think that's a coincidence. But something that turns out to be, yeah, this is exactly... Like, if Nixon had said 2 days beforehand, "I really don't think Kennedy should go to Dallas. I wish somebody would listen to me. I have a bad feeling. I've been having bad dreams about this." If he had said that, you know, then I think it would be a lot more interesting. You know?
Hey, I'm down. I really enjoy the show, and okay. I like 90% of what you're saying, but that one just piqued me.
Okay, good enough. Where are you calling from?
Carry on. I work for the New York Blood Service. I'm on the road, and I listen to you all the time. So,
okay, well, drive carefully.
Hey, take care.
Thanks for calling. We don't want to be collecting your blood off the streets, so drive carefully when you're talking on the phone. And good evening. You're on the air.
I'm checking on something. I'm asking a question about how come I've never seen any photographs of the 93 flight in the ground, the plane in Pennsylvania. I never saw any photographs of that. Has anybody seen any photographs of that plane in the ground?
I don't know. I haven't myself, but that could be because there were no photographers in the middle of a field in Pennsylvania. That could be because it was scattered over a wide area. I'm not really sure. Of the various theories that are out there, all the theories involving Flight 93, I find to be more credible than all the other ones put together. I think it could have been shot down. That's quite possible.
Why is there no debris found? I've never seen any debris of any sort, not even a wing, anything, nothing.
Well, they did find debris. I mean, there were people out there cleaning things.
They did find debris from that plane?
Well, there were people out there getting things. I know that. I wasn't privy to exactly what they were doing, but I'm aware that, I mean, there's a field where they have a memorial.
Right.
They were finding records in various places.
So the crash site. Right after the flight, after it went down, I never saw any debris as a plane, like a plane crash. I just saw a hole in the smoke in the ground. That's all I ever saw. Did anybody ever see anything going out on TV?
Well, okay, let's say for a second that, okay, none of that exists and that no one has seen it. What does that say to you then? What alternate theory are you suggesting?
I'm not a conspiracist. I'm just sort of offering, uh-huh. I'm just asking a question because I don't want to be sort of charged as a conspiracist. But it's funny to me why I've never seen any debris, anything from that flight, nothing.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's always, I'm not saying by any stretch that you should not ask questions, and yes, people should ask all kinds of questions.
But to answer that question, who calls in tonight? Can you pose that to somebody about who can answer that question for me? Why was there nothing seen? Not a wing, not a jet engine, nothing from that flight in 93.
Okay, I would give two theories. One is that yes, stuff has been seen, and we're just not aware of it, and it hasn't been publicized quite that much. I don't know, or maybe it hit the ground with such force it was completely dust.
Nothing, not a piece, nothing.
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think that nothing has been seen. I'm sure they found something, and if we look into it a little bit more, we'll find those pictures.
If the American public has seen something, please make me aware they've seen something. And I guess the last thing is that, has the bodies been released from that flight?
What's left of them, I imagine.
I understood the bodies were never released from that flight. 93.
Okay, well, that's easy enough to find out. I mean, these people are real. You can, the relatives would know for sure.
Perhaps somebody will answer the question if they call in later on this evening. But again, the main thing I'm asking is why I've seen nothing, no debris from the Flight 93, nothing. Just a smoking hole in the ground. That's all I've ever seen. Has anybody ever seen anything more? I'd like to hear it.
Okay, well, let's find out. And while we're at it, we can also find out why this has even come up as, you know, how come there weren't pictures all the time? Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. But I don't think the answer is that, yeah, that flight actually went someplace else and, well, you see, it doesn't. Even, none of it makes sense when you pursue it a little bit. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling off the wall.
Yes, you're calling off the wall, and you're on the air.
I can't believe it. All right. I've been listening to you guys for a long time. This is my first time calling.
Uh-huh.
And I want to take one of the things that the conspiracy theorists say and flip it on its head.
Okay.
When it comes to the conspiracy thing. And one thing I always hear them say is, if one of these things can be true, then you're going to have to say that there's a government hole in the story. I always like to go to them and say, hey, if one of your claims that you pin to your theory is false, then you've got to seriously question everything that you're saying about this. Mm-hmm. And they seem almost religiously unwilling to do that most of the time.
That's, yeah, good point. If they question their own theories with the same fervor that they question everything else, then I would think that, yeah, that at least they're arriving at the conclusions in a somewhat fair manner. But they seem to basically suspend all disbelief when it comes to anything that says that what you're being told is completely false. I mean, you can reach these conclusions, but the way you get there, that's the whole key.
Exactly. And if there's not that integrity at that point, generally stop arguing with the person because they feel that they're just religious and they can't be reached.
Yes, yes, religious. Thank you. That's exactly the point, that when you argue with someone who's fervently, fundamentally religious, it's almost impossible to get a word in edgewise or to reason or be rational or anything like that. By the way, sir, I got to ask, what kind of phone are you using? It sounds really weird.
I'm calling on Skype. I made a homemade Skype phone with an old rechargeable phone.
Uh-huh.
So not the best connection, my apologies, but it was lying around, and I don't have an actual landline.
Well, it's good. You're calling us through the internet, and it's a little choppy. Your voice sounds very loud, though. It's coming through nice and clearly. If it wasn't choppy, it would be great. And what part of the world are you calling from?
I'm sorry?
What part of the world are you calling from?
Well, British Columbia.
British Columbia. Okay, great. Well,
thanks for the great work you guys do. I'll let somebody else call in, and a million thanks for your show.
All right, thanks. Thanks for calling in. And again, if anybody has any thoughts, feelings on 9/11 itself, memories of what you were doing on that day, we all have memories. It's amazing how everybody remembers where they were on that day. Maybe we can talk to the one person who doesn't. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you? I'd just like to start off by saying I appreciate the forum and, you discussing this topic. I mean, it's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
But I would hope that you would just try to have a little more of an open mind as far as these conspiracy theories are concerned. I come from a vantage point where my friend was the air traffic controller on that day, and we had discussed it the following morning. And he had stated that they had already been on a heightened state of alert because of various threats and whatever. You know, they had information that, you know, had them at that point. They were on their toes. And also, 2 weeks prior to 9/11, I believe it was August 24th, a French stunt pilot had flown a motor-powerized hand glider into the Statue of Liberty. I don't know if you remember that. And he got caught up in the torch, and New York City police had drawn him in to the thing. So anyway, he said that they had anticipated terror attacks at that time in that month.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he said that he had called NORAD 3 different times, and they did not follow standard protocol. They were supposed to send up planes, and they did not. And, you know, he was watching all this on his scope. He would be able to see if they sent up intercept, and they did not.
Intercepts for which? The French guy or 9/11?
No, this was at 9/11. The French guy was just, you know, this was what brought up the topic, that they had already, they were like expecting something when the French hang glider guy ran into the torch, but that was, of course, no terrorist threat,
mm-hmm.
but they still were expecting something else, something maybe bigger. You know, that was just some clown, you know, that got caught up on the Statue of Liberty. But like I said, he said that NORAD stood down, and it, you know, in doing a little research, we come to find out that when the Bush administration came to office, they had changed what was to be standard procedure. I mean, for some reason, they made it so you had to go through either it was Rumsfeld or Cheney's office himself to get any kind of permission to intercept those flights. Why that was, I don't know, you know? And also, another thing was that that day of 9/11, they had videotaped the supervising controller at Tricon or something like that, where the air traffic controllers are, at the center. They had videotaped all the controllers that were involved that morning and questioned them and interviewed them to the point so that they could, you know, ascertain exactly what had occurred on that day. So that tape was destroyed for some strange reason. You would think that being that that was such a horrific event, why would they destroy evidence like that if they weren't trying to cover something up?
This was a tape of air traffic controllers being interviewed?
Yeah, the ones that were involved with the planes. As I stated, my friend was, he knew right away when that plane took off, because they shut the transponder off, he knew that it was hijacked. And he instantly did what he was supposed to do. There were standard procedures that were in place, that have always been in place since World War II, probably,
okay.
That were all of a sudden not followed. There was a different sheriff in town, be it the Bush administration, and they did not follow standard procedures.
Well, I mean, this kind of thing obviously happens all the time when you're dealing with bureaucracy, that you have to go through channels, and the channels are changing, and there's all kinds of confusion. What should have happened, though, when that transponder was turned off and it became obvious that that flight was in trouble?
But considering that we were at a heightened state of alert, they should have still, whether it was a drill or a practice, they should have still done what was normally done. A perfect example, which I've heard before spoken about, was when Payne Stewart, the golf pro, lost compression in his plane. He drifted off course,
right.
And within 15 minutes, he was being followed by intercept. So in this instance, you have a commercial airliner. Our President Bush, as he was reading to the children, had known that before he even went into the classroom, he knew that a plane had hit the first tower.
Mm-hmm.
And they said he thought it was an accident. But that's impossible, because it had been reported that that plane had been hijacked prior to it hitting the tower. So they already knew it was a hijacking, and the plane flew into the first tower. Now, you say conspiracies. Now, conspiracy, yeah, but it's good for business. You know, Dick Cheney's company was in the red big time, and he was actually on the brink of being indicted for fuzzy math and fudging cooking the books with Halliburton.
Right.
And for some strange reason, that all got buried after he came into power. He was using Arthur Andersen, the accounting firm, and, I mean, his shares now are like $95 a share, whereas at that time they were $5 a share. So, I mean, he was tanking.
Mm-hmm.
The military-industrial complex was probably tanking. I mean, we just got out of the Cold War, so you have all this military might that is stagnated now by the fact that there's no need for them to a degree. So there need to be a new boogeyman.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, first of all, if they were going to do it that way, wouldn't they implicate Saddam Hussein a lot more?
Well, that's a great point, but who knows what to actually believe at this point? Like I said, I'm not big on conspiracies. I would never in a million years think that my administration, my president, would have allowed something so heinous to occur in this country and to such a degree. But you know, when you really do the math and you sit down with an open mind and you just explore the facts with an open mind,
mm-hmm.
and you yourself will have to come to the fact that this was good for business. Now, maybe
I'm not denying that. Absolutely.
Towers.
No, I probably said this on September 12, 2001, that this is the best thing that could have happened to the Bush administration, because now they'll get anything they want.
Sure,
that doesn't mean, though, that they were sitting down planning the whole thing. I just think that they played this thing in a really shameful way afterwards.
Oh, most certainly. And you know what I found, which was really despicable, was Condoleezza Rice perjured herself before the 9/11 Commission. Bush and Cheney wouldn't even go before the 9/11 Commission. They only went until after it expired. They had to put like an extension in, and then Bush and Cheney showed up holding hands. They didn't go under oath,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't videotaped or there's no record of it. It's like they didn't even go before the 9/11 Commission. And that's another thing. You know, the 9/11 Commission, how can we trust these bureaucrats to be honest? I mean, we really need a different set of people. You got the former governor of New Jersey, and Hamilton had dubious dealings with the last Bush administration,
mm-hmm.
protecting them. So, I mean, these people that were heading off this commission, although they may seem like honorable folks, I do believe that they have other allegiances.
Well, yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't trust any of them. I wouldn't trust any of them with a burnt-out match. There's no question about that. It's just I also don't think they're so intelligent and smart and cagey that they could pull off some of the things that I'm hearing as being suggested as credible theories.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that they necessarily had a hand in doing what was done. Maybe there's a rogue faction within our government that did this, but they kind of helped it along. Like I said, I mean, Just the whole thing smells.
Mm-hmm.
8 months into this administration, you have this occur, and then, you know, all this profiteering going on, and not to mention that election was seen to be somewhat askew.
Yeah.
With Harris stopping the votes and the Supreme Court stepping in. So it was almost as though they looked at it as though this is our only chance. And not to mention another thing, you know, President Bush, whether it was because the guy threatened his father, you know, I mean, all these excuses they came up with in the Downing Street memo,
right.
Operation Able Danger, Operation Northwood. There's just so much stuff that they denied, you know?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I'll give you a more subtle conspiracy theory here that basically says, yes, the U.S. government was behind it. Yes, they were behind it in basically pushing policies that would incite these radical Muslims to hate America more than anything, to do as much as they possibly could to hurt us, thereby making more terrorist attacks a likelihood. And when those terrorist attacks happen, then we have the excuse to go to war and make the thing even bigger. So, yeah,
sure,
I think
justify,
to that extent.
That's a well put, that you just said eloquently. And I wish I could speak like that. You know, I do believe that, you know, my buddy said to me, he said, well, what would they do with our military? What, are they going to bring all these guys home, all these soldiers? There's no way. There's not enough jobs. There's not enough to go around. You cannot shrink the military. It has to continuously expand. I learned that in like eighth grade, mm-hmm. but my friend had made a point of it too, you know, and he said it a lot better than I could. But it would seem as though we have to rule the world, otherwise we will collapse underneath our own weight. You know, another example would be in the late 70s, early 80s, they wanted to start laying off New York City police officers.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of a sudden there was a war on drugs. And, you know, whenever they use the word war, it allows them to get into the treasury in a way that they would not be able to do.
Yeah, and now we can have wars on words instead of nations. We can have war on drugs, war on terror, war on bad. You know, just war on anything that we just want to, a concept that we want to fight. Listen, sir, I'd like to get to another couple of calls. It's been great talking to you. Where are you calling from?
Up the great work. I love listening to your program. I listen all the time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Where are you calling from?
Miller Place, Long Island.
Great. Local. Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And good hearing from people in the local listening area. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. We have time for a few more calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
How you doing, Emmanuel?
Hi. How are you?
But he spoke pretty well himself there on some of those subjects.
Yes, absolutely.
I can't easily discount the conspiracy theories either, but I think it's more of like just they might have known, had a more idea of what was going to happen and just let it happen.
There's a way of just sort of passively letting bad things happen, you know, kind of... I people like that, people who just will allow a fight to escalate by, say, maybe making an offhanded remark to somebody, and then the other people do all the bad work for you. I think something like that is a lot more likely based on U.S. foreign policy.
You can even set it up, and it was, and the idea was put out there. And one of the things in speaking of the conspiracy stuff, the loose change video
mm-hmm.
spoke about. And just to be fair, they said like a couple of times right before the September 11th, on those two airlines, there were massive amounts of puts put in on the market where...
Of what?
Puts, where they have puts and calls. If the stock goes down, somebody makes a lot of money on it.
Okay.
And they increased by like, now I don't know if it was factual, it was in the video, I didn't go check it. But it was saying it was like 10 times or 12 times the highest it had ever been that year. And it happened like in a series of times in the month leading up the 11th, like three of them on one airline, Boeing.
See, I would need a lot more understanding of how financial markets work to see if that kind of thing happens every now and then naturally or if there's something specific.
Other airlines also. That's the stuff they didn't put in there. So mm-hmm. it looks like it, but unless you have all the information.
Right.
It should be put out there for the people to either research about or think about or even talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just they took full advantage of what happened. And like the caller before said, things were going in a bad direction in a lot of areas, and it tied up a lot of loose ends and allowed them to do a whole bunch of things that they really shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, as soon as I saw those planes hitting, I knew, yeah, they're going to go after Iraq for this.
And if you question it, you're want to protect terrorists or you're un-American or
yeah, that's the real shame there where people say things like that. How dare they accuse people of being pro-terrorist if you question Bush or the war effort or anything like that?
Responsible thing to say, even for the people that high in government, they should, like you said, the angry mob is coming. I agree with you on that.
All right. Well, let's hope we're side by side on that. Thanks for your call.
Good up.
All right. Let's see if we can get these last few in. Good evening. You're on the air.
So, radio station?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I was just listening to your report regarding those 9/11 talks, and I got to tell you that, you know, we, as fellow Americans and people that are listening, I mean, you know, I understand that, you know, people have a theory of non-Americanism if you say that you're questioning it or you're doing that, but it's not a question of questioning it. It's more of the issue of, you know, actually thinking that you have a president of the United States, and I'm not saying I'm the biggest pro-Bush fan in the world, that's actually you know, theorizing and thinking the fact that, you know, he's or the cabinet, if you will, is you know, got an agenda and a financial agenda. I'm just listening to that guy from Miller Place. I mean, it's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. I mean, you think that a person that's worth, I don't know how much money. I mean, you think Cheney and Bush really need extra money to go to war and to actually, you know, take this type of money and actually apply it to, you know, their wallets? It just makes no sense.
I think that's kind of simplistic to think that's just about money. I agree with you there. But I do think it's about power. I do think it's about influencing the world and controlling as many parts of it as possible.
I can understand that they need, you know, that the United States needs to have a place in the world and to be the you know, to be the superpower that they are and we always have. But it's, you know, I got to tell you, it sounds anti-American, and it sounds as if you're you know, you're compassionate with you know, what happened when you start to say that you have a cabinet that's, you know, that's sympathetic to you know, their wallets so much that they would, you know, forego American lives and forego situations. I mean, you know, it's borderline kooky.
I think there's a certain amount of callousness going on towards the U.S. troops over there, where we just stopped caring how many of them are dying every day, you know, and what are they dying for? Things certainly aren't getting any better. I think that needs to be on the front page every day, and it's not.
And I totally agree with you there. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, and we're in a situation that, you know, I think that everyone in this country realizes that you can't pull out of, and that the situation of security would be much worse if we did pull out right now.
I'd like to see how it could be much worse. I mean, you have car bombs going off at like twice a day, dozens of people dying every day. How much worse could it really get?
Well, I think if you pull out, you open up a complete safe haven to terrorism on a toll over there. I mean, look, regardless of whether we should be there or not, I think we have to fight the fight, and everyone needs to be supportive of the troops. And I'm not dictating to the fact that people aren't. I'm just I think that you know, if we focus our theory, if we focus our energies more on the fact that you know, we need to help this country and be more secure versus what people did on 9/11 and where it started from, I think that we'd all be in a better place. I mean, you know, you can't change the past, but you can only change the future. And I'm not saying that the powers to be that are there are you know, supremely right, but I do have to say that I think that, you know, some of the theories come across anti-American. I mean, and it's not a matter of questioning. I'm all for questioning. That's why we live in the United States of America. It's just It's a day of remembrance, and you have people kind of on the radio the next day telling you that you know, oh, well, Bush was for this, and his stock went up, and Halliburton's stock went up. That just makes my stomach turn. I lost five friends in 9/11, you know, and I was, you know, I have family that was there, and it just, you know, to even bother to talk about where it came from the day after it happened, I mean, thinking that, you know, people profited by it in our country, I just don't believe it, and I'm sorry, I'm a true believer of you know, democracy in this country, and I'm you know, a true believer we have a right to you know, to vote and to speak out. But it just that didn't really turn my stomach, and it's what made me pick up the phone. I got to tell you.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for calling. I wish we had more time to talk, but we're running out of time.
Very good. Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, a lot of issues raised there, but a lot of questions still remain. And you know, I just think you have to separate the whole Iraq nonsense from this 9/11 nonsense, because they are two separate issues that our government has linked together. And I still maintain that it's shameful the way that this whole thing has played out, because I see the memory of what happened on that day, on 9/11, as being used to basically push forth all sorts of policies that never would have gone through, because we would have had some sense about us. We wouldn't have been blinded by our rage and our fear. And I think, unfortunately, that's what a lot of governments do, is rely on their population's rage and fear. And with that, unfortunately, our time is up. I see we have a full bank of phones. My goodness, this is what I like to see. But we can continue this conversation next week, and you can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. We always do. And next week, let's take some more phone calls, talk about this issue some more, and maybe some of the ones we didn't get to as well. Until then, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. See you on Off the Hook tomorrow night. Have yourselves a good night. We will teach our twisted speech to
Brooke, I be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into. Stoney.